And so our commitment, we should understand this very clearly, that this is the problem with sense gratification. See, people don't know anymore. A lot of times, in most countries, there's a traditional religions or moralities that teach that to restrict or to give up sense gratification. There's the Ten Commandments that say, you know, thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not. And they say, you know, what nasty old men, what dirty old patriarchs, life-hating guys, perpetrated these thou shalt nots. People now, the restrictions are there, but people don't know what they're for anymore. Because people have lost the fact to see that the aim of life is self-realization. Because the standard of advancement of human society is now in the mode of passion. And everyone is after sense gratification and economic development. These restrictions don't make sense anymore. But if we understand, if we can come to the standard of the mode of goodness and understand that human life is meant for self-realization, then these restrictions, we understand, they serve a purpose. And they're actually there because they are the basis of happiness. Prabhupada, in the Bhagavad Gita, you'll find the phrase, the regulative principles of freedom. And to modern people, this sounds like a contradiction in terms. The regulative principles of freedom. Freedom means no regulation. But no regulation is bondage. Because that person is free who is actually self-controlled. And if there is no self-control, then we are under bondage to material nature. At one point they were trying to market cigarettes to women, and they came up with a brand of cigarettes, Virginia Slims, I think it was called in America, that was specifically marketed, targeted toward women. And so their advertisements would show the old days where a woman, you know, in a dress of the 1890s is trying to smoke a cigarette and her husband catches her and throws it away, and then it shows the modern woman, you know, all flowing and skimpy little clothes, and it says, you've come a long way, baby, you've got your own cigarette, you see? Freedom. Whereas anybody who's ever habitually smoke cigarettes, they know it's far from freedom. It's bondage. You know, the desire comes for another cigarette and you have to have it. And it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you need a cigarette and all the stores are closed and you have to start digging through your garbage can looking for the long butts. I mean, is that freedom? This is what happens to people. It's bondage. People want to say, I want to be free to have sex anytime I feel like it. Is that what happens? Or you're driven by the modes of material nature to go out in the streets looking for sex. This is not freedom. So the material world, everything is just the opposite of what it looks like. These are the regulative principles of freedom. So the Grihastha Ashram is a place of regulation. Although it's a place that is meant for some amount of sense gratification, it's under regulative principles. And if the ashram is followed properly, one can make spiritual progress in the Grihastha Ashram. Now, of course, so our real project has to be, we have to be actually committed. If we want to go back home, back to Godhead, and Prabhupada told us this should be our aim. We shouldn't think, oh, well, not this life, but some future life. But actually we should understand that it's possible, and we should do it in this life. So we should understand that if we want to go back home, back to Godhead, at the time of death, I should be free from material desires. And that if I leave this body and I still have material desires, I'm again going to have to take birth in this world, because material desires are not fulfilled in Vaikuntha Loka. There are no cinemas there, or at least they don't play, you know, the latest Sylvester Stallone movie or whatever. You may see Abhay Charan there, but there's no sense gratification. All everybody wants sense gratification is here in the material world. So one has to be free from material desires, and that's a big project. It's not easy, and we frequently become, when we begin to become, try to become free from material desires, that's when we discover how deep-rooted they are and how hard to get out. But one shouldn't actually become discouraged about this fact, because Krishna consciousness isn't really a do-it-yourself project. If it were up to us to rid ourselves of material desires, we would certainly fail. But Krishna consciousness is the process by which we surrender to Krishna and ask Krishna to rid us of material desires. Prabhupada talks about this in one place. It's mentioned in the fifth canto that Prahlad Maharaj, in one place in Jamudweep with all the inhabitants, is praying to Lord Nrisingadev. And in talking about their prayers to Lord Nrisingadev, Prabhupada remarks about Nrisingadev that of course Nrisingadev killed Hiranyakashipu, and Hiranyakashipu is the emblem of material life, the desire for wealth. Hiranya means gold, so he wanted a great deal of gold, Hiranya, and Kashipu means pillows or soft bed, which he says is the place for sexual indulgence. So these two big, strong material desires, money and sexual indulgence, are embodied in Hiranyakashipu. And Nrisingadev killed him. Now Prabhupada said that in the heart of every living being, or every human being, there's like a tiny Hiranyakashipu inside. Our desire to enjoy wealth and sexual indulgence is like a Hiranyakashipu in the heart. And he said that when we say Bahir Nisringa Hidaye Nisringa, we chant that every day practically at the end of RT, Bahir Nisringa Hidaye Nisringa. What does that mean? Nisringa is Bahir, he's outside, and then Nisringa is in my heart. Hidaye means in the heart, Nisringa. He says when we are saying Hidaye Nisringa, we are inviting Nrisingadev to come into our hearts and destroy our Hiranyakashipu-like material desires. So this is a very encouraging news, because our material desires may be so strong and so voracious, his like it, like Hiranyakashipu, who could stand against him? Even Indra had to go run and hide. Hiranyakashipu was so powerful and so strong, but then when he ran across Nrisingadev, what happened? Ripped apart. It was like a cat with a mouse, and very easily ripped apart. So our material desires may be strong, but if Nrisingadev comes and sits in our heart and destroys them, what's going on? How can they stand up? So our really devotional service means persuading Nrisingadev to do that. we really have to invite him sincerely. Please come into my heart and destroy my material desires. We can't pray to him, please come into my heart and destroy my material desires, but later. Not just yet. So that we really have to invite him. There has to be some urgency in this matter. So our practice in devotional service, our calling out to Krishna, of course, our main practice is with the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Yeah. Oh, some people want to have a break? Okay, since 2 o'clock. All right, why don't we do that? Because it's hot in here and everything like that. So what we'll do is we'll take a break for 10 minutes. You want to wait till 5 o'clock, 15 minutes? Okay. That's true. I didn't realize people have been here since 2 o'clock. Wow. I'm sorry about that. Yeah, definitely you need air. Remember when all the demigods couldn't breathe when Dhruva Maharaj held his breath, so we don't put you that. So, okay, we'll continue at 5 o'clock. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. It matters. It's a sample, small sample only, but I think it's a pretty representative sample. There's three headings. One is called Spiritual Advancement is Home, at Home, How to Make Spiritual Advancement at Home. The next topic is the interesting and delicate question of sex. This is called the Sex Without Illusion. There's one called Domestic Bliss, a few things contributing to happiness. Although there's some over... Excuse me. The next one is even maybe more interesting than sex, is money. Money, getting, spending, and giving. So Prabhupada has advice on all of these, how to get it, how to spend it, and how to give it. And also amounts, or sometimes percentages anyway, are included. The final one, then domestic bliss. The final one, a few things on child raising that I managed to pick up. Now, there's much more of this stuff, and also I had a limited amount of time, and I think there's a limited budget, too, about how many pages we could hand out. So I would hope that you get a chance to go through this. They're pretty interesting and illuminating quotations. And so tomorrow we'll be talking a little more from these. But the first quotation, you notice the first group, I've got a little heading for every excerpt, which is actually something I've taken out. And listen to this. No need to change from family life. Grihastha is not bad. Family life is not condemned. If you remain a family man, there is no harm. We never condemn family life, Prabhupada says. Now, these are all one-sided. In the Middle Ages in Europe, there was a theologian named Abelard, and he created a big scandal because he got a lot of topics, theological topics, and he went through and he found a whole bunch of scriptural authorities and big saintly persons who said one thing on this topic, and another group of scriptural quotations and authorities who said the opposite thing. He called the book Sic et Non, Yes and No. So on all these different questions, he showed all these different contradictions. And so it was a very controversial book. And I thought in many cases with Prabhupada, I could go through with Prabhupada and make a book called Iti Neticha, you know, Yes and No. I could do the same thing. And one of the ones, is grihastha life good or is it bad? So I could compile many, many quotations about grihastha life is bad. And I've had them thrown at me, you know, many, many times. And during that controversy that was referred to, the fratricidal war, we heard them all. And one side was throwing one group of quotations, it's bad. And here's this whole other group of quotations. We don't condemn it, it's not bad. So was Prabhupada was he contradicting himself? No, he wasn't. And if you look at these, grihastha life is good, but it's good under certain conditions. Sometimes Prabhupada is talking about grihastha life, and this is the stuff we used to hear, that when you become a householder, all your spiritual advancement stops. It comes to an end and nothing happens until you become renounced. There's statements like that. And there are other places where Prabhupada says it makes no difference. You can make just as much spiritual advancement in the grihastha ashram as in the sannyasi. Doesn't make any difference. You know, when there was this big controversy that happened, I'll tell you a little about that if you want to hear some old ISKCON horror stories. This was 1970, what? Five, I think, or maybe 1976. I was the temple president in Philadelphia, and my very, very dear friend Tamal Krishna Goswami had organized. We were good friends even then. He had organized the Radha Damodar traveling bus parties. He had so many big buses. And they were full of, headed by sannyasis with all these brahmacharis. So this bus party, they got involved in the book distribution. They were distributing so many books. But what they would do is they would go to the different temples and they would steal all your brahmacharis. Now most temple presidents were grihasthas. And they would come to the temple, sometimes when the temple president wasn't there, and they would preach to the brahmacharis that you know, you should leave, that this temple president is a rotten householder. Prabhupada, by the way, once referred to himself. He says, that was when I was a rotten householder. He's materially attached, you know, you should leave, we can take care of you, and all that other stuff. So this was the preaching, and it got, well, here the temple president, you know, we have our temples, we're making devotees, we're trying to carry on the movement, we have a brahmachari ashram, and these people are coming and they're stealing all the devotees. And they're doing it by preaching against householders. You know, who are the temple presidents? That was the real issue of the thing. Oh, I remember, and really, most of the people in that Radha Damodar party were friends of mine. And all of a sudden, you know, they were preaching like this. And in fact, one of them, one of their lines was that the temple presidents was like Prajapati Daksha. You know Prajapati Daksha? He had some sons, and then Narada Muni came and preached to them, and Prajapati Daksha cursed him because he had plans that his sons would become Prajapatis and get married, and Narada Muni had them become renounced. This is a story in the Bhagavatam. So the temple presidents were like the materialistically attached Prajapati Daksha, and they were like Narada Muni, and so on. That's when it came up. So finally the whole thing ended up in Prabhupada's lap in Mayapur, and by the time the temple presidents got to Mayapur, the GBC had already met. And they'd passed some resolutions, and the resolutions were that the sannyasis should take over the temples, that all the householders who were temple presidents should give up and go outside and get jobs and so on like that. There are other things. And so the temple presidents got together, and we were very upset, and we wanted to appeal to Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada got the GBC together. He says, so your resolutions have created a revolution. Resolutions, revolution. He said, resolutions, revolution, no solution, dissolution. It was very heavy, you know. And oh, you couldn't imagine the scene in Mayapur. I mean, there was the sannyasis were meeting, and the temple presidents were meeting, and it was all going on, and it was getting more and more intense. But then the clue came. Actually, there was a morning walk, and they asked Prabhupada if a person is going to take initiation from a spiritual master, and one spiritual master is a sannyasi, and the other spiritual master is a householder, isn't it better that he take initiation from the sannyasi, who's more renounced? Prabhupada said, no. Kiba vipya kiba nasa shruji kene nai se krishna tattva say guru hai. Hey Krishna tattva veti say guru hai. Whatever he is, whether he's sannyasi or brahmana, shudra, doesn't matter. If he knows the science of Krishna, he's guru. And Prabhupada just left it like that. So, of course, ultimately he decided to remove Tamal Krishna from that position and put him in charge of China, the China mission preaching. But it was a big thing like that. So the same thing, whether householder ashram is good or bad, it depends on how it's conducted. If it's conducted properly, then there's no obstacle for spiritual advancement. But if it's not done correctly, then it's true, all your spiritual advancement just goes on hold and nothing happens until we proceed further. So if it's right here, one thing is here, if you look at this first quotation, I find to be a very interesting one. This is from the Bhagavad Gita. And the first thing Prabhupada says, now there are many places about not getting attached. And this one is about detachment from children, wife, and home. You can both ways, children, spouse, and home, husband, wife. So that's one of the items of knowledge listed in the Bhagavad Gita, that one should not be attached to home, to spouse, to children. There's a material attachment. So that detachment has to be there. But Prabhupada says, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. They are natural objects of affection. So sometimes people who get very enthusiastic about leading a renounced householder style think that it's wrong to have even feeling or affection for their children or their spouse. That's not true. It's not possible that one has children and doesn't have some feeling. You'd be a monster if you didn't have feeling. And one has a spouse, even if one is not lusty, if the affection is not mainly based on lust. One has a wife, that wife for so many years gives so much service, has held for so long. Naturally you're going to feel affection. How can you not? You'd be crazy if you didn't feel affection. So that affection is natural. So he said, but when they are not favorable to spiritual progress, then one should not be attached. So the thing is that the situation of family life, husband, wife, children, home, it has to be made favorable for spiritual advancement. Then we don't... And so he says, the best process for making the home pleasant is Krishna consciousness. If one is in full Krishna consciousness, he can make his home very happy, because this process of Krishna consciousness is very easy. And then Prabhupada gives us four things to do. In fact, this purport, every time I conduct a marriage ceremony, and I have to give a little lecture about marriage life, I read this particular excerpt, because then Prabhupada says there are four things one has to do. One need only chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That's one. Accept the remnants of food stuff offered to Krishna. Two. Have some discussion on books like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Three. And engage oneself in deity worship. Four. So this is, he mentions the four things. Then he says, these four things will make one happy. One should train the members of the family in this way. The family members can sit down morning and evening and chant together, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If one can mold his family life in this way to develop Krishna consciousness following these four principles, there is no need to change from family life to renounce life. But if it is not congenial, it is not favorable for spiritual advancement, then family life should be abandoned. One must sacrifice everything to realize or serve Krishna, just as Arjuna did. Arjuna did, and so on. He goes on about how he actually killed his family members for Krishna's service. So this is the thing. So four things. He said everybody can do this. You can sit down together morning and evening and chant Hare Krishna. You can have some discussion on books, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. One should offer all one's food to the deity, and one should worship the deity. I mean, this is very, very nice. Like Prabhupada mentioned that when he was a child, his father was regular worshiping the deities, and Prabhupada had some little deities of his own. You know, that even as a child he was worshiping some deities in imitation of his parents. And in this way he got a very young impression. And then of course we know how Prabhupada conducted his own little Rath Yatra and things like that. Because if the parents are like that and doing like this, then the children naturally will. So here Prabhupada, all the way, he gives us these different instructions that how one should lead regulated grihastha life. Grihastha is not bad. Family life is not bad. This is the next one. Therefore it is called grihastha ashram. This word means where there is spiritual cultivation is practiced. That is called ashram. So it may be household life, it may be renounced order of life, it may be brahmachari, student life, retired life. The spiritual culture must be there. This is human civilization. So there are the different regulations and rules, practices for this spiritual cultivation. So four things Prabhupada mentions here. That now, as far as deity worship goes, Prabhupada said in the letter that if you live nearby a temple, then it's best to go to the temple for deity worship. But if that's too far to do that every day, then you can have deities in your own home. Even some people who are fairly close by, they have deity just for offering at home. They have a small altar. If you're far away, then your home can become a temple, actually, and be no different from a temple. So this is very nice, these four things, that they're pretty easy to do. And you notice they're things that even children can participate in, that they're not excluded. They can be involved in the deity worship. They can be involved in the offering of prasadam. I mean, you're doing it at home. It's not like a temple kitchen, you know, where they're... You just teach them how to help correctly. They can also hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna books, some stories that the children like, and of course they can chant Hare Krishna. Because one of the major projects, as we'll find out if you read these, were the major project of the Grihastha Ashram is to produce saintly persons. He mentions somewhere, I don't have it in this particular thing, Prabhupada mentions that this is in connection with Kapila and Devahuti, that Kapila Dev wanted to have an expansion of Vishnu as a son. It says one can either have two kinds of children, a maximum, either an incarnation of God or a great devotee. These are the two kinds of offspring that one can have. So really, what he says, where do these, he said in a little lecture about this, I have it right here actually, I just happened to run across this. Prabhupada was in Tehran, and there was just a small group of householders there. And Prabhupada sat down to give a Bhagavatam class, and this was about Kardama Muni, desired to beget a child who would be a ray of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should beget a child who can perform the duties of Vishnu, otherwise there is no need to produce children. This is the purport. There are two kinds of children born of good fathers. One is educated in Krishna consciousness so that he can be delivered from the clutches of Maya in that very life, and the other is a ray of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and teach the world the ultimate goal of life. And of course he begot such a child as Kapila. Great householders pray to God to send his representative so that there may be an auspicious